So you know that John O'Dowd took on Michelle O'Neill to try to unseat her as vice president of Sinn Féin. What Sinn Féin are keeping secret is just how popular John O'Dowd was. They're refusing to tell you about it. They're refusing to look at the numbers. And you know what that does? That pricks up all of our interest. Why wouldn't they tell you? Did Michelle O'Neill win by a landslide? Was it neck and neck? And no matter what way it was, why are Sinn Féin trying to keep the numbers from the public domain? In August, the long-standing Stormont Assembly member, John O'Dowd, said he would take on Michelle O'Neill for the role of deputy. Party members voted on Saturday, where Mr O'Dowd lost his bid. Sinn Féin has said it will carry out a review into how it elects its leaders over the next 12 months. Mick Fealty, the editor of the Sligo O'Toole website, is with us again this morning. Good morning to you, Mick.
Hi, Stephen.
Good morning, good morning. And the journalist Amanda Ferguson, good morning to you, Amanda.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning to you. And Mick, you think the media should be doing more with this story. Tell us what you mean.
Yeah, well, you know, when John O'Dowd, when he announced he was going to run on, incidentally, I hadn't figured it out until I wrote the piece the other day for a Cross Channel magazine. But it was the, I think it was the 25th anniversary of the IRA ceasefire. So it seemed to me that at the time, at least he was trying to send a message that generationally there were difficulties that he wanted to address, not least the recent awful local election results that the party had in the Republic, where for the most of the last 10 years it's put most of its political capital. And what he said on that day was, I look forward to the debate across the island. I didn't mean in the public domain. I don't think it's advisable for political parties to run internal debates on the media. I think that's a recent trend that I don't think it's very advisable for any political party to do. But when we've seen several leadership elections in the SDLP, and they always involved hustings. On one occasion, I can't remember which one it was, but there were four different candidates all going round, and they said it built a certain degree of camaraderie between them and subsequent support for the ultimate winner. But in this case, there doesn't seem to have been any hustings. There was no talking across the island. Remember, it is a 32-county electorate, this. And so neither Michelle O'Neill nor John O'Dowd got the customary opportunity to lay out their manifesto to say exactly what they would do with the office of deputy. Now, remember, it is deputy president. It's not the leader. So there are limitations that we could say, but it's a blind vote. For me, it raises a serious question about who is accountable within Sinn Féin? Who made this decision? We're told it's the leadership, but that nebulous term is never properly explained in the public domain. And my feeling is the media should and could do more to push Sinn Féin to come clean. And
well,
say,
you're going further than that now, Mick, aren't you? Because I've read from your posting on your website where you talk about peace journalism's unspoken rule. And you are suggesting within this that there is an element of the media that goes after unionism in a far stronger way than it goes after nationalism.
Well, I think that's generally true, and that's certainly something that unionists feel, but I don't think it's just unionism.
Do you agree with it?
I absolutely do agree with it. I think, but let's not limit it to unionism. You know, a really good example of this, which I cite in the piece for the Critic magazine in London, was a very good example of this was Conall McDevitt when he was forced to step down after a lot of fierce and ferocious and probably just media scrutiny over whether he was paying his wife to do some research services. And at the same time, I dug around and found out that Sinn Féin had pulled together a company run by its own head of finance called Research Services Ireland. Now, Mandy McCauley subsequently, over a year later, did a great documentary on that, and what she discovered was that Research Services Ireland was taking expenses from individual Sinn Féin MLAs and MPs to the extent of £700,000 over the 10 years that it had run. Now, that was great journalism, but it was, unlike McDevitt, it was given a very soft landing, packed in with other stories about Ross Hussey had a big office that he'd spent money on and various other things. So the shocking effect around McDevitt, which forced them out of Northern Irish politics, whereas a much bigger story in a sense. We know it was a big story because shortly after Mandy made that documentary, Research Services Ireland was disbanded and the whole operation suspended. That's the bigger story, and yet in terms of the intensity in the media, McDevitt caught it, and Research Services Ireland were allowed to basically just slope off the playing field and did it more or less scot-free. So I don't believe this is really just the nationalism versus unionism thing. I think the SDLP have suffered by it. I think all of the other political parties themselves accountable.
Well, here's some of what you say, and I know you're saying it again today, but just to read from this, you say, the way peace journalism typically unfolds in Northern Ireland these days, the presumption seems to be that in order for the peace settlement to work, everyone else, but especially unionist politicians, must be scrutinised within an inch of their lives, whereas Sinn Féin is too dark and deep a hole for any journalist to contemplate looking into for more than a few fleeting moments. Yes. Amanda, what do you think?
Stephen, I just don't agree with that analysis at all, and I'm sure that a couple of Sinn Féin press officers laughing at the idea that the media here gives Sinn Féin an easy ride. Whenever you look at the John O'Dowd, Michelle O'Neill leadership challenge story that was covered by the Belfast Telegraph, the Newsletter, the Irish News, the Irish Times, the BBC, RTE, Q Radio, Belfast Live, and I'm sure a few others that I haven't mentioned, as well as commentary on social media. So to suggest that, it's not something that has been given attention is a nonsense, and it's also something that will come up again and time and again as we move through the months after the election, whenever leadership issues come up again, whenever there may be further challenges in the future. And to suggest that this is just something that's, for Sinn Féin is not actually true, because when you think about it, maybe in Northern Ireland we do politics differently from other parts of the UK or in the rest of Ireland, but when you consider Arlene Foster's takeover from Peter Robinson, or you consider what just happened the other week with Steve Aiken becoming the new leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, the process around Arlene Foster was kind of like a coronation, that it was just taken that she was going to be the next leader. And with the Ulster Unionists, there wasn't even another candidate put forward. So with that process done behind doors, where it was decided that Steve Aiken was going to be the only person that would go forward, and then he gets named as the only candidate.
Well, that's not quite how that unfolded now. Others had speculated as to whether they were going to run or not, and then they announced they weren't going to run, and Steve Aiken was the only candidate.
But there was no process. That's noted as we go along. But when we consider the pressure that journalists in Northern Ireland are working under, resources aren't what they used to be. The golden days of the 80s and 90s, whenever money was tipping all over the place, just isn't happening. And if you look to journalists...
But Amanda, sorry to interrupt, but Mick is going further. Yeah. Mick is going further than that. He's and Mick, you can speak for yourself, but he's saying that in order for the peace settlement to work, so there's an inference in there from Mick Fielty that in order for the peace settlement to work... Well, there's no inference at all. These are his exact words. Everyone else must be scrutinised to an inch within their lives, except Sinn Féin.
Well, Sinn Féin is scrutinised in the same manner that everybody else is. And I don't actually buy into this whole idea of peace journalism. It's just journalism. The same journalism that was happening decades ago was happening now.
Okay.
You follow the news, you follow the story.
Mick?
And it's not the journalist's choice about what the latest scandal that emerges is.
Do you want to respond, Mick?
Look, at the end of the day, right, this is about accountability. Now, there is a fair point there, Amanda, and I completely agree about the money going out of journalism. I also, as someone who views Northern Ireland issues from something of a distance, I appreciate the courage that it takes to write some of the stories that people have had to do, particularly around the Banner and UDA and stuff like that. But let's get on to this accountability thing. The point is, the Ulster Unionist Party has had leadership challenges from time immemorial, from Lee Reynolds' stalking horse against Molyneux to the dethroning of the constant pressure from Geoffrey Donaldson and others against Trimble during the early years of the peace process, you know, to the Mike Nesbitt standoff with Basil McRae. There's a long history here. Now, it's not the same for the DUP. The DUP, in a way, had a lot of similarities with Sinn Féin in the sense that Paisley was unassailable until Peter Robinson deposed him. And then Robinson himself ran into political trouble around about that controversy over the killing of Kevin McGuigan when Mike Nesbitt stepped out of the institutions and forced him into this really strange hokey-cokey dance where DUP ministers were in one minute and then out the next.
Yeah, and we cover every element of that, Mick.
Sorry?
We cover every element of that. It's not as if journalists here aren't covering every single twist and turn of politics that's happening here. And, Mick, you know, you do mention that you aren't based here, and this is no criticism of you, but, like, where are you based and have you ever worked as a journalist?
No, look, let me just finish the point, Amanda, and I can come back to that. The point here is that the other political party leaders are where the buck stops, right? Robinson lost his job because he failed politically in office, and his job was taken over, yes. It was agreed internally through. This is why I'm not saying that all these processes have to be public, but there is clearly competition within, and there is also response to pressure from without.
Well, Peter Robinson retired, didn't he?
He retired,
and he would say he certainly did not lose his job over failure. He retired, and I've had quite a few people laud the skills of Peter Robinson and make comparisons with other leaders and wish that he was back.
I just don't understand what the particular focus is on how the media covers Sinn Féin. Whenever it's clear that we cover every twist and turn and every way that new leaders and leadership challenges are conducted within every party. Like, if you look back through the papers, you'll see every part of Arlene Foster taking over from Peter Robinson was documented. You'll see that, you know, the speculation about Doug Beattie, could he be in the frame for the Ulster Unionists, and then what happened with the Ulster Unionist leadership, you know, announcement. All of that is covered, so I just don't understand where the criticism is coming from, and it makes me wonder, Mick, is it your issue with Sinn Féin rather than what you think is the perceived failure of the media?
Mick, can I push this one last bit? Because it is potentially, as you know, and it is potentially, being a journalist yourself, offensive to suggest that peace journalism is going on in Northern Ireland. In other words, that journalists in Northern Ireland have some type of agenda to run along the corporate lines of the peace process. Like, that is really putting it up to journalists in this country, is it not?
Well, look, the peace journalism exists, it's just journalism.
Well, look, I was quoting from Ed Maloney, who wrote a piece for an essay for on the subject.
Again, not...
Hold on, let's let him finish now.
Finish the thing through. So it's not... I didn't make the term up. There's no corporate interest around the peace process. In a way, journalists do have a responsibility to maintain, as far as they can within the ethics of their own practice, to maintain a peaceful and prosperous society. That should be part of it also. It's not as though the consideration isn't an important one, but if that consideration means not asking awkward questions about why John O'Dowd was silenced for 3 months, why members of the party were simply not allowed to see a manifesto, were not allowed to gather together officially, at least. No doubt there was a lot of informal getting together around the background. And then finally, why were we not allowed to see the numbers? Because we have no real indication of what's going on if we don't see, you know, okay, if everybody agrees in the party that it's John O'Dowd and not Michelle, okay, there aren't any numbers, so we can't see them. Same, Mrs. May kind of avoided having to go to the country, as was laid out because Andrea Leadsom stepped down. But there's a process that we can see. There is a process of accountability. But who, you know, who is this leadership that says, well, we're not going to do it like that? And, you know, John O'Dowd, and it's not simply me, and it's not, you know, it's not my agenda, if you like. There are other commentators who are much more in favour of Sinn Féin, who have remarked repeatedly over the autumn how John O'Dowd was given absolutely no public platform. In other words,
but that's a criticism of Sinn Féin, Mick. That's not a criticism of the journalists that are covering the story. We are covering the story. No one would like to see those figures more than I would. But, you know, we can't force them out of the Mary Lou McDonald's hand. All we can do is scrutinise the decision that was taken by Sinn Féin not to release those figures. And imagine the fact that it's we're in the middle of an election campaign has something to do with it. Of course,
well, it doesn't matter. That's them defending their own political interests. But the point is, you rightly said that things are done in Northern Ireland, which are different to the way that it's done in the rest of the United Kingdom, and certainly different from the Republic, where all political parties get a very rough ride without fear or favour. But that's simply for me.
Mick, I think I look, and I'm really trying to be neutral here, but I think the suggestion that, well, I can certainly talk on the part of this programme. I can tell you now that Sinn Féin fall out with us 3 or 4 days a week out of a 5 day week, some weeks, and then they fall back in again. They don't huff for too long, but they do fall out with us quite often, regularly. You should see my phone, the text messages on my phone. You could write a book. You know, to suggest that Sinn Féin doesn't get a rough ride as much as any other political party, Mick, I'm lost for words.
There's no evidence of that.
Well, I cited the McDevitt stroke Research Services Ireland thing just because I cited it in the piece. It's a broad. You listen to what your listeners say, and you watch Twitter, and you'll see that many people within nationalism would say that I've got this wrong, but you'll see an awful lot of frustration within unionism that they don't see the same level of scrutiny. I understand the point. Sam McBride made this point to me yesterday, very respectfully on Twitter, and he said, look, we can't force this information out of Michelle or Mary Lou, but the point is, It's odd. It's strange.
Well, why are
all
why,
of these things?
Well, let's move on to the more pertinent part of the story, Amanda Ferguson. Why is Sinn Féin hiding the figures? Why wouldn't they want to be open with their electorate and say, well, look, here's how it broke down, and whatever way it is, they could spin it as every political party would to. You know, if it was close, they could say we've two really popular people within the party. If it was a landslide for O'Neill, they could say, well, look, the person that was way out there, Michelle O'Neill, is that popular? You know, why are they hiding the figures?
Well, you know, you obviously have to ask Sinn Féin that question.
Why do you think?
Directly, but why I think it's happening is because I don't think that it was felt that the leadership challenge came at the right time. For Sinn Féin, that it was, you know, that they're not a party known for too many different solo runs. And I think that what we saw was John O'Dowd putting his sort of head above the parapet as such, trying to force a new type of politics within Sinn Féin. And I think that the motion that was passed about how they would conduct their internal sort of election things was passed as a sort of nod to that. But you have to consider that we're in the context of Northern politics here of Stormont not being in operation for nearly 3 years. Now, whenever Martin McGuinness was retiring from politics and through his ill health, it was very clear that Michelle O'Neill had been sort of hand-selected to be the new Northern leader, the new deputy leader.
Any differently than Arlene Foster had been selected?
Quite, and that came from sort of the top within the party as such. And it's only been a few years that she's been in the role, so I think maybe John O'Dowd probably, because he had stood in for Martin McGuinness at different times during the Assembly, that it was felt perhaps that he might be in the role. It was also felt that Conor Murphy would be someone that would be in the mix to be in the role, but it ended up being Michelle O'Neill. And I think that there was a lot of criticism of her, you know, like why her, you know, why has she been sort of like catapulted into this role without very much consideration of the fact that it wasn't so much that, it wasn't like she came from nowhere. It wasn't as if she was sort of like jetted into the job. She'd come through, the council, through the mayor role, through the assembly, through two different ministerial positions. So you could argue, you know, why would she not be in the mix? And I think that there, because there was so much focus on the fact that, you know, it shouldn't have been her, it should have been someone else, that it's only been a couple of years to allow her to bed into the role. And I think that whenever we're dealing with Brexit and we're dealing with the sort of issues around Stormont not being there and the really poor relations between the two biggest parties, that I think perhaps it was felt that it wasn't the right time. But I think it's been, it's good for politics that John O'Dowd has done this, because he's had to obviously, force the conversation, and it's up to Sinn Féin how they conduct their business.
Let me see what we're saying.
Every twist and turn isn't covered by the media.
Let me see what we're saying at home this morning. Someone writes to me on email, nolan@bbc.co.uk, and says, "Hallelujah. At last, a media man calling out the media. The bias has been exposed." Totally agree. The Nolan Show is way up there in its bias, says this emailer to the programme. Jim's in Newry. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Go ahead, Jim.
Would it not be more beneficial to get Sinn Féin on to discuss the Irish Language Act than to discuss why somebody didn't get vice president in the party?
Thank you, Jim. And Sean and Ballymurphy. Morning, Sean.
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, in the past we've heard from people who have left the ranks of Sinn Féin allege that there isn't proper elections. What they say is that people are either appointed or anointed. The fact that they're hiding these figures could sort of bolster that position. It also, you know, for all we know, John O'Dowd could have won the election.
Well, no, there's no suggestion. There is no suggestion that that has happened whatsoever, nor is there any evidence whatsoever of that. What you don't know is how close it was.
Where are they hiding the figures then?
So they said ahead of it that it was going to be an internal matter, that it wasn't for public consumption, and that was well reported across the media. And I was at the Ardèche in Derry at the weekend. It was a very low-key.
But why would it be? Why would it not be for public? Why would they not want the voting public to know how many people wanted Michelle O'Neill to be the vice president? Like, why would that figure be controversial?
You would have to ask them that, but I'd imagine that in the middle of an election campaign, whenever Sinn Féin is asking people to come out and vote for it, and it's asking its leaders to make a strong case to the party, it may not have looked particularly good if Michelle O'Neill standing there and a certain percentage of delegates weren't endorsing the leadership that she was trying to offer in the North. But, you know, like the suggestion, Stephen, that you don't go after everybody whenever there's a story there. It's not a question of, you know, oh, we have to like focus on the DUP or we have to focus on Sinn Féin. You go where the news is, you go where the story is. You know, it's not for us to determine what the latest scandal is or what the latest controversy is.
Can I ask a question there?
Yes, go ahead.
I don't know all the inner workings of political parties. Is it common with all political parties that they would have a secret ballot? Is this, would all parties do that?
Mick Feely?
If so, then it's none of our business.
What is the answer to that, Mick? Is it common?
Well, it's not a straightforward answer, because as Amanda has said, you know, within the DUP, we've had three successions. We've had two successions after Paisley, and none of those, I think, were direct competition. I remember being in the room when Margaret... forgotten her name, the first woman leader of the SDLP,
Margaret Ritchie.
Yeah, so I just happened to be around at the time. It was my first and only SDLP conference. But yeah, the figures were there, absolutely. But also there was drama and there was theatre. And I remember one guy, one journalist, telling me that that he'd arranged with one of the tellers that when he came out, he would wear a certain colour tie to give him a heads up early before it got announced off the platform. So all of this stuff is de rigueur. It's not important that we understand that we're there at every hustings. What's important to notice about this is that there were no hustings. There was no internal debate. So the party itself suffers, I think, rightly from what your caller from Anderson's time just said, not because anything untoward went on, and I'm with you, Steve, and I presume that the result is bona fide, but that by not having that internal discussion, the party doesn't know what it thinks in terms of the body of the party, the democratic base of the party.
Sean McGeer, who is a senior press officer within Sinn Féin, I suspect he might be one of those with a raised eyebrow.
Or laughing into his coffee,
thinking that the media doesn't take Sinn Féin on. Mr. McGeer and I clash quite regularly, and then he rings up the next day and says, "Good morning, Stephen." But I see him, well, sometimes he doesn't actually, but that's another story. I see him tweeting today, "The BBC does know that John O'Dowd was on BBC programmes three times over the contest, right?" he says. John in South Belfast. Morning, John.
Stephen.
Yes.
I don't know. I really don't know why it's anybody else's business. Even Slur Rose Hood and all that. Why is it anybody else's business? Look, see the voters of Sinn Féin. The voters of Sinn Féin know Sinn Féin's policies. Every time, before the vote for them, they know all their policies.
Well, the voters of Sinn Féin don't know if Michelle O'Neill has got that vice presidency by the skin of her teeth. The voters of Sinn Féin don't know if it was only down to a handful of votes.
It doesn't matter, so what? What's that got to do with you? What's it got to do with me? What's it got to do with Slough Road? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Sinn Féin, as a party, they can make their own decision. Don't be, just because you don't know, you want to do a programme about it, just because Slough Road doesn't know, He's taking the opportunity.
There was no public debate or hustings regarding that internal contest.
And Matt.
Well, why wouldn't they want that? Is that part and parcel of the mechanisms of a healthy party, a healthy political party?
Sure, what's the point of hustings? Sure, there's been plenty of hustings in the Conservative Party and they've still come out and told lies.
But that's the thing, like with hustings, if there was hustings for any contest, the media would be there in the heartbeat if they were allowed into the room. So this mixed criticism is of Sinn Féin, it is not of how the media conduct themselves. And in Northern Ireland, the news cycle is really, really fast and there is a lot happening. Like, you only have to take into consideration what happened in the North Belfast contest whenever the Ulster Unionist Party were threatened, essentially threats of violence if an Ulster Unionist stood in the contest in North Belfast, and that's a direct assault on democracy and a completely abnormal set of circumstances. You know, that doesn't raise any heads anywhere outside of the media here. Perhaps down in Dublin a little bit, but that's not headline news for days upon days.
Well, listen, if it had been across the water, it would have been a top story. It would have been on the 6 o'clock news.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we have to deal with the fact that there is a lot of abnormality in our society and in our politics. That does get covered. You know, the banners that have gone up, abusive banners of John Finucane's candidacy in North Belfast. You know, all of these things aren't what would be usual in an election contest. You know, a democratic contest. We'll put forward our candidates, we'll put forward our policies and let the public decide. But these are all the sort of abnormal in terms of policy.
All right, here's Peter next in Belfast. Morning, Peter.
Well, John O'Dowd wouldn't be my kind of politician. What I find refreshing about him, Stephen, is he could always, when you're interviewing him, he could always hold a good interview. He always said everything right. And he wasn't like one of these politicians after a few words, the sexism words, equality, gay, more. He would have held a good, honest conversation with people. And I found it quite refreshing. Him being Sinn Féin, that he could do it.
I wonder, is it counterproductive or not for Sinn Féin this morning that part of the result of them not releasing the figures is here's people like you talking about why John O'Dowd would have made a good vice president rather than just moving on and accepting that it's Michelle O'Neill.
But maybe if he had a win the vice presidency, would have been maybe a bigger challenge come up down there. I think he's quite loyal as well. But what I found refreshing about him is, honestly, and it's not like me to say it, he can hold a good conversation and you didn't get the same old rhetoric out of him every minute. You know, some politicians here, they shouldn't even have to talk. You should just say, would you play your tape recording? And because you say the exact same words every time. I find him quite refreshing for being from the other side. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to leave it there. Amanda and Mick, thank you very much. 030-30-80-55-55. I must write a wee book sometimes about the communication channels, shall we put it like that, between some of the political parties and the Nolan Show. and the text exchanges and the WhatsApp exchanges and the phone calls that we would get and what is said in our ear sometimes. Let me tell you, it would be a bestseller.